Like when you pour yourself a bowl of cereal and sit down, what are you reading while you eat?
Toby, I love that you think I'm reading. I'm literally watching Netflix.
Okay, so back in my day, I would spread a gear catalog out in front of me and I would search through all that beautiful gear every single meal.
Toby, you know there's a thing called websites now to look at the beautiful gear that you love?
Yeah, but I tried that on churchgear.com and that website sucks.
No. We have a website that actually works, that actually shows you a microphone if you search it. Imagine that.
So you're saying all our friends can make their tacos, sit down, pull out their phone, and just start shopping on churchgear.com and it will work?
Yeah, and the website will actually load quicker than I can say churchgear.com.
Blake, what is your favorite state in this great union that we call the US of A?
The sweet, sweet state of South Carolina.
Well, let's go on a journey there today.
Welcome to the Church Gear Podcast, where we pull the tech director out of the booth and onto the stage to share the most outlandish stories and hidden wisdom from the tech trenches. And now, here are your hosts.
I'm your host, Blake Hodges, the first full-time hire and the first one to get fired every single day here at Church Gear. And I'm here with your other co-host, the only San Diego Chargers fan that I know, Toby Walters.
You're fired for that statement because there's more than one Chargers fan.
That I know. I personally know. I like the Chargers. Love Justin Herbert. Big fan. I just don't know any other Chargers fans.
So, Blake, we recently hired a new guy. And wonderful young gentleman, just beautiful, beautiful man, flowing mustache like a young Burt Reynolds, Jonah.
Good guy.
Jonah came to us from Northern California, Sacramento area. And basically before Church Gear, Jonah likes to describe himself as a professional maker of whale sounds.
That is a job title apparently in California.
Do you understand this reference? Like where whale sounds and worship music meet.
I know that they both have a sort of
exactly. So Jonah, you know, would show up to churches with his guitar and his many, many pedals and make whale sounds. He's, you know, a professional worship whaler.
I see.
And it's
now
a thing. And so first day that he started?
It was his first like full-time day that he went out on the road with me. You know, he left being fishers of men in Wales and went to fishers of gear.
So poor Jonah, first day, he gets thrown into fire of a road trip with Blake. I mean, I have to host a podcast with you, and it's brutal, man.
It's a lot. And then he had to do 8 hours one way with me and then 8 hours the next. Maybe it was seven.
You guys drove to Anderson, South Carolina, okay, to our friends at New Spring Church. Mm. And New Spring is an awesome church in Anderson. They have, I don't know, like 185,000 campuses all over the area. And they had sort of a central, warehouse?
Yeah, so we pull up. They've got a loading dock and everything. It was amazing. They have this huge warehouse, and Jonah, his eyes, you know, are just like beaming at all the gear. It's his first gear run, and he's having that moment we all do where you're like, ooh, but I want this one.
He's got to realize this is not a normal trip. Like, not every church has a warehouse filled with gear like New Spring.
Totally. I mean, the warehouse, when a church tells us they have a warehouse, we're like, okay, this is going to be awesome.
So, and another very unusual thing on this trip was simply the amount of certain kind of gear that they had that is not, we don't get a lot of it, which is whalers use it all the time, which was
guitar amps.
Guitar amps, correct.
Did I get that right?
You got it right.
Oh my gosh.
And they're not passive or active. That's not how guitar amps are described. Like they technically, well, a guitar amp has to be active because amplification is active. That's what active is. But I know the other day you looked at an orange cab and you said, oh, so it's passive. And I'm like, yes, that's true, but embarrassingly so.
I see my mistake now. Of course it can't, it's got to be active because it's an amplifier.
No, a cabinet is just the speaker in a box. It doesn't have an amplifier in it. An amplifier head would sit on top of the speaker. I know I'm kind of like, your mind is exploding right now.
It looked just like the Vox that was next to it. That was an amplifier.
Okay. I get it. It's hard stuff, you know.
Man.
So Jonah's first day, and Jonah loves guitar gear, pedals, amps, guitars, like it's his passion in life, except for his bride, Steph. If you're listening, Steph, Jonah loves you more than guitar gear.
But just a little.
Just a little. But he's seeing Orange Amps, Dr. Z, Vox, I guess you don't know names, so you're... Oh, Mesa, I mean, Boogie.
I remember, yet all those names ring a bell because I'm checking them off the list, making sure we got them all.
I mean, how many churches these days have all these great custom tube amps just sitting in warehouses? And the reason they're sitting there is because there is something that has really come up in the industry that is, at least for churches, it's killing these manufacturers. And I'm super excited to talk to somebody today that knows a lot about this secret. It's not really a secret anymore, but I'm excited.
Let's do it. Let's bring in our guest. Now, he has sent in his truths and lies. His first one is he's a preschool dropout.
Can preschoolers drop out? Like, do they have that freedom? I feel like mom either says you go or you don't.
I saw that too and thought this has to be the lie or the most creative truth in the world. His next one is my great-grandfather was a made man in the mafia.
Whoa.
Gosh, I hope that's also a lie.
I hope so too, because we're going to say some things that might embarrass him personally.
Yeah, I want to be on tech directors' radars, not the mob's radar. And then he said I was the all first-class chair bass clarinetist in the California State High School Band 2003-2004. It's very specific, has to be accurate. And then the founder of Tone Junkies. Ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Sullivan, or as we like to call him, HW.
Well, hello there. Hello there. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you for joining us. We have to figure out what your lie is. So Blake and I...
Yeah.
I mean, if the mafia thing is true, then I feel like maybe there's a little bit of liar in your family line. But okay, Blake, like preschool dropout? Like, can preschoolers drop out?
No, it's not possible. My mom's been a preschool teacher for like 2 decades. None of them have ever dropped out.
I mean, I guess a kid could say, like, I'm not going back. You can't make me. Like, I mean, I have kids. Sometimes they literally, like, put their feet down and you can't make them do anything.
Wait a minute. I thought they do everything you say.
You know?
Not that well, huh?
You just called me out. It's true. Okay.
No, I was giving you a compliment. You're the one who said they don't do it all the time. I'm living under this kidless illusion of mine. Okay.
Wait, they're also supposed to be false, right? No, I'm just kidding. I'm joking.
I'm laughing at the mafia line because this is now the second podcast episode where we've mentioned the mafia.
We've really got to stop doing that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say we know he's the founder of Tone Junkies.
Yes,
that's out.
We know that.
I'm going to go ahead and assume the first class thing is real because it's so specific.
The first chair bass clarinetist.
Yep.
Man, that is like, that's the biggest nerd thing I've ever heard in my life.
And those are some hard words to say together.
I'm going to go with the mafia line because I'm hoping it's not true because I'm worried about made men coming after us.
Same. I'm going to say that's the lie.
Well, unfortunately, that is true, actually.
Whoa.
I didn't know him. Funny story. Yeah, real thing. And pretty much the only thing I really know about him is stuff I found on mafia websites.
So his name is listed in...
It's right there.
Woo.
And it's a crazy story. I don't have to go too much into it, but since this is pretty much a mafia podcast at this point.
Obviously.
Oh my gosh.
Real Sicilian people don't really mess around with the mafia. And it doesn't really have this glorified nature that we have.
And so you have Sicilian in your family?
Yeah, yeah. So a quarter Sicilian. And so that side of my family, they told us all for a lot of years that he just left. He just got up and left. And what was actually true was that they lost track of him after he was doing some time for some stuff that happened. And then when we found this out, we went and did some research and figured out, you know, how he lived the rest of his life after he sort of lost contact. But that was because, you know, if you go to Sicily and you ask some question about the mafia, people will tell you, I've never heard of the mafia. What's that?
Which is, they don't want anything to do with
they
it.
They don't want anything.
Yeah.
Anything.
So how did you drop out of preschool?
Well, that was a creative one. So I went to a preschool called...
Little Sunshine. There's got to be something about the sun in there.
Well, I don't even know if it had a name, but it was at Church of the Highlands in San Francisco area.
Okay. This is not the Birmingham Church of the Highlands.
No,
okay.
No. There's only so many names for churches, you know. Yeah. We got
yes. You got north, south, east, west, and then you run out of ideas.
Yeah, totally. They had a preschool. I went for 4 days, and then I told my parents I didn't want to go. My dad didn't want me to go. My mom wanted me in preschool, so my mom waited for my dad to go out of town, put me in preschool. By the time my dad got home, I had been in preschool 4 days. I said, "Dad, I don't like it here. I don't want to go." He put his foot down. I didn't go to preschool anymore.
And was it your dad's dad that was mafia?
It was my dad's grandfather.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On my still mom's within that
side.
Lineage.
Yeah, yeah, yes, on that side. Yeah. Yeah, put his foot down.
Amazing.
I was the first chair bass clarinetist, but only in the Archbishop Reardon Intermediate Band. Wow. That was the extent of
how did that work with like your social effort for the ladies?
Well,
was that the first thing you would drop when you met women?
Yeah, pretty much. I made it oddly specific so that to throw you off. I mean, I don't even know if there is a California State High School band. There could be.
There could be. You might be part of it.
I might be. And
when I saw how specific it was, part of me was like, this is the lie.
Yeah.
So, HW, yes. That's an interesting moniker. Where did that come from?
Oh, I just picked that one up. No, I something about being on, YouTube or, just making content made me, it can sometimes make it more comfortable to not go by your real name, not that I hide my real name, but
I mean, with your celebrity status,
I mean, it's,
yeah. We had to keep fans out of the back door just to get you in here.
There's something, I think there's some psychology around kind of having a single name or having something a little memorable. I never met any other HWs. There's all sorts of stories of where it came from, but I'll tell you where it really came from. I was watching the movie There Will Be Blood. And then the next day I was playing darts with some friends.
Daniel Day-Lewis, classic.
And, yeah, great movie. And I figured, there's a kid in that movie and, his name's HW. I thought it sounded dignified. And people were signing over the oil rights to their land. And I figured, well, if they'll sign over the oil rights to their land to someone named HW, it must be a smart, smart sounding name. And, surely they'd watch my YouTube channel.
It's done well for you. I mean, do you, Bono, and Cher just get together as
pretty
single
much,
name people?
I'm glad you said that. It also hits on the single name thing because it's two initials. It also goes with I read this study one time that said people who have a middle initial sound smart. People who have a first initial sound even smarter, And then you get multiple initials in there. And pretty soon you're J.R.R. Tolkien, you're J.P. Morgan Chase. I mean, you sound like an absolute...
This is
titan of industry.
Wow.
So,
blowing our minds right now. So how do you pronounce it? Is it?
It's just HW.
Ah.
I've seen people try to spell it online. And
spelling is hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially online.
Yeah. HAITCHHW.
Where are you at in the process of having it changed legally to HW?
Not changing it legally.
First name H, last name W.
Yeah.
And your kids have to call you HW.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I've tried actually on, it's very difficult to just put in one letter for first and last name on most, websites, checkouts. So it'd be very difficult if I change my name.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay. So we were talking about guitar amps at New Spring.
We were.
And they've all, I mean, I guarantee you all these things have been replaced with what technology?
Well, probably with a Kemper. But before we get into that, can I tell you, I'm not a football fan anymore, but I just wanted to let you guys know that I was a football fan. I was a Niners fan, being from San Francisco, back when we beat the Chargers Super Bowl 29. I believe we beat them 49 to.
You're just slicing
20.
Deep into my heart.
I think it was
1998.
Truthfully, I don't know that I've watched.
You guys
a game
won like
since.
50-3. It was horrifying. Yeah. Steve Young just lit us
up. It was
up.
Good.
Yeah,
was
thanks
good.
For that.
You're
Open
welcome.
Wound salt.
You're welcome. Yeah. I also have a whale joke since we were on the topic of whales earlier. If this is an old one, I keep for whenever. And this will work in a church too. I've told this in two churches and went over really well at one, not well at the other. Here's a joke. Both times when there were technical problems, had to buy time. Okay, so this whale walks into a bar and he's got a rabbit under his fin there, And he walks in and the bartender meets him and says, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, hang on. We don't allow his kind in here." And he points to the rabbit. And so the whale says, It's funny because that's how a whale talks.
Okay, so is it the whale laughing? The whale is laughing at the joke.
It's a perfect joke for buying time because you can let the whale sounds go as long as you want.
I see.
I could have kept going even longer, but
you were doing that with a Strymon timeline, right?
Yeah.
This whole time,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Guitar players get that joke.
You know, it'll work.
Yeah.
It'll work. You do that over a prayer, a little communion, you know?
Maybe I'll just pop that out at some point.
Well, I mean, if we ever run out of content on this podcast, we can make whale sounds. We can bring Jonah in to make whale sounds. And it, you know, it is ironic that his name is Jonah and the whale. Like we,
it's perfect.
It's perfect.
It's perfect. You asked me about the Kemper.
Yeah.
And the Kemper, there's a bunch of kind of other things that, achieve a similar,
Axe effects.
Yeah. There's Axe effects. There's Line 6 stuff, you know, it's all part of the sort of digital, guitar wave that's out there. And, I myself discovered the Kemper, when I first moved to Nashville about, I don't know, 7-ish years ago. And, noticed that there were a lot of Kempers in home studios, in all sorts of studios. I saw people using them live. And got pretty into it. It was a mutual friend of ours called the Sues, who's on.
Hi, Nate.
Yeah, hi, Nate. He also goes by Sues, which is in a, we've got a thing going here to protect his real identity, I suppose.
Yes.
Sues actually had some connections with some of the people at Kemper and tried to turn me onto it. I never really got turned onto it until I showed up one day playing at this new church that I was playing at when I just got to town, and just volunteering in the morning. And I put my in-ears in, and I had my Sur Bella amp, and I had my Sur guitar, and I had my Strifecta. You know, that's all three Strymon time, all three Strymon big pedals at once, you know.
I've never heard that, but that's beautiful.
It's a Strifecta. It's got, had the King of Tone overdrive. I had everything. You know, every, probably $6,000 worth of gear I'm carrying in here, right? I look like I know what I'm doing. And I put in my in-ears, and the guy, I think the tracks start. It sounds like that someone started the tracks, like we're playing the stems. But I look over and I realize it's the other guitar player. He was just playing the guitar. He's doing some whale sounds, some swells, you know. And he's playing a Kemper. And I was like, oh, wow, that sounds really good. He had a Strifecta too, but he was using the Kemper for all the amp sounds and stuff. And been hooked ever since. And it's kind of the past couple years, there's been a real growing interest in digital solutions. And I think really silent stage solutions have driven sort of the appeal of the Kemper. And so the Kemper is unique because it's a profiler. It sort of copies the sound of amps. Sometimes people say it steals their soul. So you can, it's designed to mic up your favorite rig, your favorite guitar amp, and kind of sends in a bunch of beeps and boops. And then it pulls out this sort of algorithm model that you've created that's supposed to sound like your rig. And I mean, and if you're a church tech director and you haven't heard of them, where have you been?
Yeah, so at our church at Fellowship, we have at least two on one campus and one at another.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a total game changer because, I mean, I was doing worship guitar stuff at churches for 2 decades.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always the battle of where do you put your amp? How, because a tube amp, a real tube amp, it needs a certain level of saturation to make it sound the way it sounds, which pushes out volume. And so you've had those like ISO boxes that some churches are building under their stages. But yeah, with how good the Kemper sounds, it's a total game changer for the church production world, at least.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, most places are just going to be too small, really, realistically, to have an amp in the room. I, as a guitar player, I rejected that idea for years, you know, and I never went along with it. And I played for, you know, 10 plus years, you know, with an amp behind me, you know, and miking it up and sort of fighting the sound guy. And I've been at some churches where, you know, maybe the church is growing or whatever. We do 3 services, even 4 services. We do a Saturday night sometimes and 3 services Sunday morning. And the joke was like the last service of Sunday. Well, that's where you get to turn up to the level you actually want to play at. Cause what are they going to do? Turn you down the next service? Like everyone's too tired to say anything. You can come up, but, that problem really kind of goes away. And I don't think it's really just for the small churches either. The amount of pros that are using the Kemper today, like, is pretty crazy. Nigel Hedroff's been using a couple at Hillsong. Obviously, not everyone uses it on all the dates and stuff. So, you know, I'm sure someone's going to be like, I just saw Nigel last month and he didn't have a Kemper. How dare you? But Nigel, Stu G, my buddy Stu G, plays for Michael W. Smith. He's using them pretty much on every gig. I know a bunch of guys at Elevation
You know, we were just at Elevation, and they didn't sell us any Kempers.
They didn't sell you. Well, they're
they didn't
using
even
them.
Sell us any guitar amps, which is disappointing.
Probably on the last, I don't know, all of the Elevation releases for the past several years have had Kempers on them. I know a couple guys over there, and I know there's Tone Junkie stuff on all those Kempers. Let's see, who else? All sorts of people. I know all of Carrie Jobe and Cody Carnes guys are using like Axe FX. It seems like everybody, you know, Phil Wickham's guitar player for a while. I don't know if he still plays with them. He was on Kemper. So they're all over Church Records right now. So, and even on the big stages, it's consistency is an advantage. You don't have tube amps going out, and volume, and you get the same thing every time, right? Like tube amps are temperamental. They're great. I mean, I love them. Don't get me wrong. I have 50 plus, you know, amps. I have a big collection. I love amps, but you know, different tools for different things.
So you started Tone Junkies, and Tone Junkies, I mean, essentially your whole shtick is you create profiles for Kempers.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. If you're a Kemper fan and you don't know HW, I mean, I gotta assume you don't have an internet connection.
I mean, you're basically the Kardashian of the Kemper.
The Kardashian
world.
Of the Kemper. I'm stealing that. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
And you could look up Tone Junkie on all the social platforms, and if you're into Kemper, you've probably run into it. I've targeted you with ads, and maybe spent some money to get in your face. And I wear floral and try to get people's attention, and sometimes it works and sometimes they want the stuff that's out there. I started Tone Junkie actually just as a YouTube channel that had nothing to do with Kemper. So if you go back and look at all my old videos, it's just me doing like mediocre gear reviews, you know, in a bedroom. And I thought, well, if I'm going to buy some gear, I should be able to write it off. And so I knew the IRS would let me write off things for like 2 years before they, you know, said this is a hobby. So I started doing it, just doing some gear reviews. And then quickly somebody basically said, well, it might've been Sue's. They said, you should do some free Kemper profiles and give them away. And I was going to give them away so that people would sign up, you know, subscribe to the channel. And I had a buddy tell me, hey, don't do that. People don't like free stuff. They do, but they don't value it, right? If you give something away for free, people are like, oh, cool, okay, you get free. Would you put a free record, a free this, free that, right? If you put some money on it, you'll raise the perceived value. So I looked around and I realized other people were charging like $40 for a similar sort of collection of profiles. And so I slapped $10 on it and I sold it. And that weekend I sold 100 of them, made $1,000. And I went, well, this is way better than gear reviews. So that became the business. And then kind of just from there got on this mission to profile the world. So I talked to somebody and they said, well, you gotta bite off more than you can chew, and you gotta do something that never ends. And so that was a business guru type who's out there, and I thought it was good advice. So I started to profile the world. So the goal is profile every amp, all the models. Can I do it? Probably not, but maybe. We'll see.
So I'm sure you've had some kind of holy grail moments where you have made the pilgrimage in search of that, you know, iconic thing. So your challenge right now is to name drop, if you can, something that even Blake will recognize. Blake is like, pop culture references are so lost on him. We talked about Goonies previously, and he's like, never heard of it. I mean,
if you have a 20-year age gap with your boss, you got to watch all the content that he did, or you're dumb.
Most of our listening audience would be like, oh, Stu G. Like, Stu's amazing. He's a great guitarist and, you know, Delirious, Michael W. Smith, mm-hmm. all that. But that's even lost on Blake. So you got to aim even higher. Can you hit us with somebody's amp that you've been in contact with?
Have you ever heard of, I don't know for sure. This is like it's a kind of a case of was at the studio, right? No photographic evidence, but, I have a particular amp that, I think is more famous now since I own it. But that's
obviously,
just me. But,
HW,
it's called HW's Purple Plexi. It's a 1968 Purple Plexi. And it's purple, and it's a Plexi. Familiar with Plexi amps?
He's familiar with Purple.
Purple mattress, maybe.
So a Plexi is an era of Marshall amps. It's a couple models you could call a Plexi, but they're called Plexis because they had Plexi fiberglass fronts where the knobs are.
Gotcha, gotcha.
And then pretty soon later, they became brushed aluminum, and that's usually what we have today.
And like Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, mm-hmm. like all these guys mm-hmm. made them famous in the 60s.
Yeah, they were the amps they played in the late 60s, mm-hmm. mid to late 60s. They made, these are the Marshall amps they made.
The rock and roll amp.
Mm-hmm. So the big Marshalls you see up there. So I own a particular amp that was in the room or was, it belonged to a guy named Aspen Pittman, who you don't know, that's fine. But he loaned a bunch of amps to a studio when there was a rock band making an album called Appetite for Destruction. Ooh, ever heard okay. of him? No.
I mean, he wouldn't know the record, but I think he would know the band.
I do this thing. We're all smile and nod until I die. So I'm just going
to
keep
smiling. Welcome to the jungle, sweet child of mine.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Welcome to the jungle, baby. Oh my gosh. Iconic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. See, I might not
know
the band.
Do you know the name of the band?
You still haven't said the name of the band.
I don't know the name of the band, but I know their song.
Bang, bang. Come on. And Guns.
Guns and Roses.
There you go.
Look, I love their art. I might mm-hmm. love a painting and never know the guy who painted it.
Every day we see Blake growing up before our eyes.
Oh my goodness.
Guns N' Roses reference.
There we go. We love got it.
So yeah, Guns N' Roses, we found one. There's a Guns N' Roses.
So maybe Slash.
Yeah, so
did
I mean
some work on it.
Yeah. So Aspen Pittman had at one point the world's largest tube amp collection. And he's a founder of Groove Tubes.
And is that Joe Bonamassa now? Good question.
That
Joe
is a good question.
Yes.
I don't know. It could be. There might be. Yeah, I don't know who else. But he apparently loaned a bunch of amps to the studio for that project. And I was told that amp was one of the ones that was over there. But, those guys were partying a lot. And as with all like contemporary popular bands, no one's like usually documenting what goes on. You know, because no one thinks they're going to be Hendrix one day. No one thinks that 30 years later, people are going to kind of, go gaga over which amp was on which overdub and which part and which Les Paul and what was the height of the pickup, on the strings. But that album is at that level for sure.
So you're taking your Kemper and then you're taking the sound off of these amps and then making a catalog of all of those sounds.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
you can sell them. That's a thing.
Yeah. That's a thing.
Okay. So, okay. This is that's starting to thing. Make sense to me. That's cool.
They're kind of like plugins for producers, guitar players, kind of thing. And that's where a lot of outside the church world, Kemper seem really popular in like the production world. In terms of, I know a lot of producers who maybe share a studio or work out of their home, or they have a home studio. And they've figured out that, the ability to sort of capture and save these amp sounds, the sound of your amp, on with just the sort of click of a dial, is a lot quicker than miking up an amp, re-miking it up, deciding which amps you want to use, dragging them in a booth. And it saves them time, pretty much. That's just it. It saves them time. And so,
Do you think church tech directors are like, their prayers end every night with, and thank you, Jesus, for Kemper amps so I don't have to deal with stage noise?
I hope so. I hope so. I think it's the best solution out there for churches, really, because the Axe and the Helix stuff, is more of an all-in-one kind of unit. The Kemper's all-in-one too. But it's more designed that Kemper kind of looks like an amp and it can take the place of an amp. And so if you're a church tech person, director, worship pastor, leader, guy, whose job it is to sort of get some gear and manage different volunteers coming in, being able to allow players to use their own pedal board is, I think, like the absolute must do.
You can't make those whale sounds without your own pedals.
Yeah, you got to be familiar. And I've seen churches where people go, everyone use this Helix and it lives at church and get familiar with it. You can't do that. It's not a good solution. But the Kemper really can just capture an amp, take the place of that Vox AC30 that you used to have there. Now it's silent on the stage. And, guitar player 1, 2, and 3 can each bring their own pedal board and plug it in, just like they used to do with the house amp. And if they all have 3 different amps, you can profile all 3 amps. You can get, or you can buy profiles of those three amps or find them free on the internet, you know? And then hopefully they have the same experience, you know, as they would walking in, having the amp in an isolation room downstairs or a booth or just backstage or just pointed away from them. I mean, once you put in-ears on, you know, you shouldn't really need to hear it on stage.
Yeah. It sounds great in your ears.
Yeah. It should.
Yeah.
It should.
Have you profiled like well-known Christian things? Like do you have a Hillsong pack or an Elevation pack or anything like that?
Yeah. So there is, there are some amps that are like signature amps of guitar players. Like Nigel had an amp, I think called the Scarlet or something. I can't remember what it's called. I think it was called Scarlet.
It was not a Purple Plexi.
It was not a Purple Plexi. Nope. We did that amp, we did one of those amps, you know, it was a production amp. And, but he's got some stuff out there too. Most of these guys, like even David Hislop, from, Bethel, has his own Kemper pack out. Nigel has his own Kemper pack. James Duke has his own Kemper pack. You know, if you don't know those people, they're the sounds you're trying to get, you know, it's those guys.
Sure.
Yeah.
Got their sounds from the Edge.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
Ish.
Blake actually has a Kemper pack out, but it, I mean, the collection is a bit odd, I would say, Blake.
It's definitely all the odd sounds in the universe, but hey, sometimes you put one and two together and you got a great beat. You just never know.
Yeah, yeah.
So how many do you have cataloged at this point?
Amps?
Yeah. Like, what's your running total?
That's a really good question.
I'm seeing here you've got a hashtag profile the world, so I'm
yeah.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
I'm assuming you've got a long list at this point.
It's 200 packs at this point. So 200 different amps, maybe. And, you know, inside each pack, there's going to be different captures, different profiles of the amps at different settings. Sometimes they'll be pushed with pedals. Sometimes they'll have different speakers. You know, you're talking about speaker cabs earlier. You know, something like the Purple Plexi, you know, you almost got to do it three times with three different cabs just to sort of capture.
Got to get your greenbacks and your silver bells.
Yeah,
and all
you
got to
do everything, and even the years and stuff is all different. And you know, if you're a tone junkie, it matters. You know, so now to the layperson, it doesn't, right? I mean, most Sunday morning. I mean, you mentioned the Edge. I would say it's unfortunate because it can be a discredit to that fine gentleman. That a style of guitar playing is so much associated with him. When I think his style is much more rock, mm-hmm. much more interesting.
He's not doing a lot of ethereal stuff.
No, he actually doesn't use a lot of reverb.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you know, a lot of guys, I'm good friends with Stu G, and we've done a bunch of Stu G's amps, and a lot of people who probably work at churches and are in this demo, you know, they're my age, that mid-30s sort of, you know, maybe some of their first concerts were like a Delirious concert, like a Third Day
sure.
concert, you know? And they go nuts for Stu. And it's funny, when I listen back to that music, a lot of times people will call him sort of one of the, you know, godfathers of this type of sound, you know? He didn't even own a reverb pedal back then, which is like weird, right? But you listen to that stuff, there's not really reverb on that stuff.
Yeah.
And there is, but not like it is today. Not like it, not like it is today.
It's not drowning in it.
Yeah, today's its own style. And it's neither here nor there, whether it's good or bad. The point is, it's music that you can recreate at all these locations all around the country and the world. And the music's accessible and simple, but you know, contemporary.
Okay, Blake, back to our pop culture references. Do you know who the Edge is?
I don't.
It's fun when our guests come in here and like, we're just saying these things like everybody knows because all of our listeners know who the Edge is. And I mean, is this getting mean at some point or?
No, listen, someone has to run logistics on this podcast. I got to do some other stuff. I'm good. I'm smiling and nodding.
I know. And I'm giving you credit because you're not even Googling these names as we say them, but the Edge is a guitar player.
Okay.
The lead singer was Bono. Have you ever heard of Bono?
Oh, I've heard of Bono. Okay.
Okay. What's the band
so
then?
So far. What?
What's the band then?
Oh gosh, oh, guys, Blake. I thought Bono was the band.
Oh, Blake. I'm going to have to fire you for this
What's
one.
What's the real band name then?
Oh my goodness.
Well, it's a little band called U2.
Okay, well, and I know U2. Okay, sure. I don't know all these in connection. Do I know U2? Yeah, you put all those songs on my iPod that one time. Piss me off. Yes, I know.
Well, now you put one and U2 together and you've got the answer.
Okay.
Did you see what I did there? That was... Yes.
I like how we got there. That was a
Thank
fun
you.
Journey.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So, HW, when you are profiling these amps, you're veering into tech, category and expertise when, I mean, you're literally putting a mic in front of this stuff, running it through a preamp, and you're having to capture this stuff.
Sure.
So talk to our audience about like the tech that goes behind capturing this amp. So you just putting a 57 up there? Or are you taking more care?
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. I mentioned that story earlier where I thought the guy sounded like the other guitar player when I first heard of Kemper and kind of next to me. He sounded like the track, and I sounded, you know, I sounded like an SM57 to me because that's, you know, at the end of the day, I had $6,000 worth of gear running through a $79 worth mic, you know, like $79 dynamic microphone.
Well, we get lots of SM57s running through our warehouse.
And they work and they're great. But you know, the beauty of the Kemper is you can capture a studio kind of setup, you know? And so, so for me, I go with, kind of what I like, most of my gear changes as I use different things, but, it's either going to be like for me, a Royer 121 with maybe I'm partial to the older silver SM545s, kind of the predecessor to the 57.
The Elvis mic.
Yeah. And, probably I have done a lot of stuff with the Fathead 2, the Cascade Fathead 2. And I used a 57 with that for a long time, switched to the 545. I'm also really partial to the R101, the Royer 101, which is a more contemporary mic that I don't think they make anymore. I think it's been replaced with the R10, but it's a good mic. And there's a mic called a Panther. I don't even know who makes it. Most people have never heard of it. Someone turned me on to it. It's a ribbon mic. It requires power, which is not always the case.
And yeah, you don't want to accidentally put phantom power on a ribbon mic unless you know it needs it.
This one requires power, and it has a more dynamic sound. Like it's a little more mid-range forward and bright. I think it's maybe voiced to be a standalone ribbon that sounds more like a blend of a dynamic and a ribbon. But I'm usually blending the two, and then it's usually I use some pre's, you know, whatever I'm into, sometimes Neve, sometimes APIs.
You compressing on the way in?
No, no compression because the Kemper is looking for the amount of compression that a guitar player would produce or a guitar amp would produce. So there's a threshold there. If you can compress a little bit, but if you get too much, it knows you're doing something wrong, basically. And it wants to respond like the amp. There's compression you can add on the Kemper after. There's a bunch of effects you can add afterwards. Of course, guitar players are going to use compression, you know, on their boards or whatever. But yeah. Yeah.
So for all of our audience that are church tech directors, how do you recommend they mic their Kempers?
Don't mic it.
You sure that mic won't help?
It won't help.
You put a mic in front of that Kemper, it's not going to add a little sparkle?
You know, one of the great, I think one of the cool solutions too is that even if you wanted sound on the stage, you could achieve it without sacrificing, you know, sort of a direct clean signal right to the board, you know, and that's helpful because it can help a guitar player. But no, I'd recommend you just go right out of that convenient XLR in the back of the Kemper right to the board. I'll tell you that the biggest challenge, I've taken the Kemper places, I've done some traveling with it, just little one-off gigs for friends and stuff. And I'll show up and the tough thing is I say, oh, I don't need the mic, you know? And they'll say, oh, well, what do you do? And I go, oh, I can just go XLR out. I'm like, what do you got? I'm like, oh, I got this unit, you go XLR. And then, but I've learned this quickly. Don't under any circumstance let them give you the XLR from the mic that they've been using because that thing's got so much EQ on it and you're about to send them a finished sort of sound, you know, they might need to do something with it, but they're going to take your, you know, sort of full sound, whatever they're doing in that SM57, you might not want them to do directly to the Kemper. Not that the Kemper sounds different, but you might have used different mics and, you know, if you're using a tone junkie profile, it's sort of a more, I think, mix ready sound than an SM57 by itself with no EQ. Because sure. I do put some EQ on it. You know, EQ is something I'm going to do. And then, you know, also the placement, you know, is gonna affect the EQ a lot.
So then you recommend when people buy these not to use too many, like, presets or compression or reverb, like, just go as is with it? Did I say any of those words correctly? I think I...
You pronounced them correctly.
Yeah, they were good.
Yeah.
Like, when you send it, I'm just thinking from a theoretical standpoint, when you send that sound, is it ready to use as is from there?
I mean... I've never met a surgeon who, you know, didn't use a scalpel in surgery. You know what I mean? You've never heard there's no mix guy who leaves the track alone. It could be okay. Perfect out of the, you know, that's a bad analogy. I don't know why I said that, but I don't know any surgeons. But I've never met a mix engineer really that's going to leave anything alone, right? So everything's always going to get touched a little bit. So it's it should sound, what they should be getting is hopefully like a setup that they would set up in a studio if they were going to record that guitar. And then from there, you know, you've got to EQ anything to the mix that's in front of you. But hopefully it should be a really good starting point. The same starting point that you'd have in a studio environment, you know?
Blake, it's kind of like if you had a old home movie and mm-hmm. you put it into your TV and you'd adjust your TV, you know, brightness and sharpness and all that to make your whole movie kind of pop and look better. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're going to play, you know, Star Wars remastered through your TV, but now all of a sudden that Star Wars is through that same setting you just did for your home movie.
Yeah.
It's going to ruin the Star Wars image a little bit because Star Wars is finished and complete and came out of the best mm-hmm. production in the world.
I see.
Yeah. You know, the TVs have like sports settings and movie mm-hmm. settings, cinema settings and stuff. And there's a lot to, you know, this is sort of the beauty, I think, of going digital. And if the Sue's my good friend is on the channel. He, you know, he's in this world, and why he chooses Kemper and why he turned me on to it is you've really got this challenge of, you're trying to produce weekly these deliverables that are finished mixes that are, you know, really good sounding live music. And it can be difficult to do because, you know, there's so many variables that move around with microphones, with tube amps and everything. And there's best practices. And tube amps are designed to make a sound, you know, and they're old technology. And so the difference between what you want a tube amp to sound like, how it sounds just sitting in a room, and what you want in a direct, you know, in that mix environment is going to be different. So like every producer is going to cut, you know, below 100. Maybe they're even going to go to 150 and down, and they're going to cut there. And nobody wants any mic hiss or anything, you know. The guitar, especially in a live environment, is going to live in that mid-range. And one of the great things about going digital is you can sort of, as a guitar player, you can save those things, and you have those options. Like, you can't on a Fender Twin cut 150 and below. You know, you can't cut 6K and above. You don't have the power to EQ like that. But you do with digital. You don't have the power to notch out, you know, 1600 where a female vocal where you might really be clashing, you know, or something like that. So from a tech perspective, it is a better mousetrap for sure.
So as you've been to a lot of churches, and I mean, obviously Kemper is close to your heart because it's what you do. You create profiles. You know, churches may invest in in-ear system to lower stage mm-hmm. noise, drum mm-hmm. cage. They may go the Kemper route. What is something like, is there something that's stuck in your head? It's just sort of like, we call it our tech takeaway. Is there something that you would say to churches like, start with this, or this is I wish all churches would know this to just help their services in the tech and the sound aspect take that step up?
That is a good question. What I would say is, how much time do you spend every Sunday either adjusting a microphone on a guitar amp, troubleshooting why that mic doesn't work, re-EQing, you know, this or that? And how often does your less experienced sound guy struggle because they're the less experienced ones to solve a problem that your more experienced guys, you know, can solve easily, right? And so all the time you invest into training those people, that's really great. But you know what's kind of better? A save button, right? And amps don't have save buttons, and that's what makes them challenging, right? Like, amps and mics don't have save buttons so that when you get it right one time, you can't just save it and pull it back up, you know? But with digital, you really can. I know for me personally, I started using the Kemper, but where I really, really like fell in love with it to the point that I'm like, even if I had an endless supply of roadies, I wouldn't take my Purple Plexi or my vintage Voxes or whatever. I wouldn't take them out of the house. Because for me, I realized I could put in my in-ears, I could make adjustments in that environment right there and get the sound I wanted and save it. And when I went home, I had it saved. I didn't have to touch it. I didn't have to mess with it. And it allowed me to have a sound that was really dialed in for that church right there. And then it allowed me when I went to go record a church record, I could make the adjustments, save it. And then when I was playing live, I had those same exact sounds. And so, you know, how much time do you spend troubleshooting guitar amps? I don't know. Maybe don't. Maybe just use the save button. You know, we use it for keyboards. We use it for, we pull up scenes on the, on whatever they're using on the
lighting
mix.
Console.
Yeah, for everything,
digital
right?
Mixer, all that stuff.
Yeah. So the more, you know, that's the advantage of digital. The more sort of automated you can get with every aspect, it's gonna add value.
Well, you know who else added value today was UHW. We appreciate you coming on, man.
Oh, thank you so much.
Is there anything you want to plug?
You can find me on all relevant socials and even some of the irrelevant
ones.
But
who should they search? UHW or Tone Junkies?
You search for Tone Junkie and you'll find it. If you see a monkey with pink hair, you are in the right spot.
Monkey with pink hair. All right. Well, thank you for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for listening. And hey, congratulations on surviving Sunday. If you happen to make it through next Sunday as well, join us again for your weekly tech breather.
So, Blake, you've seen the movie There Will Be Blood.
Daniel
Day-Lewis.
I have.
I know he was kind of an oil tycoon in the 19th century, but the one modern thing he indulged in, do you know what it was?
I'm going to guess bourbon.
No, it was the Church Gear early service.
Oh, that was my second guess.
I understand. He knew the value of seeing all of Church Gear's greatest gear 48 hours before it went live on the Church Gear site.
He was hunting for oil underground, and he said, I don't have time to hunt for gear. And we said, let's just give you the best gear right here.
He sure did. He went to churchgear.com/early service, and when he wasn't, you know, doing hostile takeovers on oil fields, he was getting that gear.
Well, how do you think he was playing his shows to ease the people doing those post-oil parties?
Blake, when you pour yourself a bowl of cereal and sit down, what are you reading while you eat?
Toby, I love that you think I'm reading. I'm literally watching Netflix.
Okay, so back in my day, I would spread a gear catalog out in front of me, and I would search through all that beautiful gear every single meal.
Toby, you know there's a thing called websites now to look at the beautiful gear that you love?
Yeah, but I tried that on churchgear.com, and that website sucks.
No. We have a website that actually works, that actually shows you a microphone if you search it. Imagine that.
So you're saying all our friends can make their tacos, sit down, pull out their phone, and just start shopping on churchgear.com and it will work?
Yeah, and the website will actually load quicker than I can say churchgear.com.